Podcasting from the Pacific Northwest, this is Haggis Talk,
a podcast inspired by the Scottish Highland Games community, Celtic culture, and annual events sponsored by the Seattle Highland Games Association.
Warm up the bagpipes, get your dancing shoes on.
I've come to the right place now.
And don't let the caber throwing scare you.
It's Highland Games time, baby.
Heck yeah, that is what I am talking about. Welcome to Haggis Talk, everyone. I am your host, Brett Lathrop, for this episode. Man, the pipes are a-blaring, and this is going to be a great episode. May you live in extraordinary times is the saying, and we are definitely living in those. We're in an interrupted year of the Celtic festivals and the games that have had to be postponed and canceled to pick up the following year at their normal times. But Scots and Celts are resilient peeps, and using the technology available, podcasts like this and the virtual games, online events are helping to keep the spirit alive. And speaking of spirits, aka whiskey, our show theme, It Takes a Village and Whiskey. Haggis Talk listeners, boy, do I have a wonderful guest for you to talk about that village today. One of my special guests picked out this intro music, which is fantastic. It's a medley. It starts with The Dirty Bee, goes to Clueless, to Humors of Tula, Picnic in the Sky, and then the banjo breakdown. But we'll introduce her in a second. Let me introduce our crew. First of all, we get support from our El Presidente, Colin Matheson, our Veep, Sandra White, the man, of course, with the money. I love to call out his name. He's got his hands on the checkbook, which is important if you're Scottish. Don Fink. And then our Geek Squad, Megan Tuffer, and our head trustee, Sharon McBride Wrightless. As I said before, seems to have her hand on the pulse of everything. So I wanted to make sure and include her in the shouts. The website is www.sshga.org. Facebook is the Seattle Scottish Highland Games Association. And now let's do some partnering shouts. Food is a huge part of the games, as we've said before. And one of our amazing food vendors is Piggly's. And Piggly's and the other vending groups that are a part of their juggernaut of food chaos that happens at the games. If you've ever been out, they've got fish and chips, they've got burgers, they've got those grand turkey legs that take all afternoon to eat, and they've got the basket of fries, very popular with the kids. So thanks for your support, and can't wait to get back out there and sample some of their great food. All right, I'm going to bring this down. Holy cow, that is, I don't know how their fingers move so fast. That's amazing. All right. As I said, a great show for you. And as our theme is, it takes a village and whiskey to put on a game. So let me introduce my special guests. It's the chieftain himself, Colin Matheson, and the trustee chairman of the SSHGA, Sharon McBride Wrightless, who was president for, Sharon, 24 years?
Yes, that's correct.
Welcome to you both.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know if I've been doing this long enough to be chieftain yet, but president works for me.
Right. Well, you were chieftain once, weren't you?
No,
you weren't. Oh, well, you've got that coming, I guess. Sharon, have you been chiefed into the games?
Yes, I have. Back in 2011 when I stepped down being president. They elected me to that position later. You got to put your time in, Colin. Sorry.
I know. I'm expecting to get there anytime soon.
He's the newbie. Well, isn't chieftain and president kind of the same thing as it relates to the clans? I could be wrong.
Yeah, as it relates to the clans. That's true. That would be true. That's right. We just have an honorary chieftain who presides over the games, and that position is handed out to someone who's been a very strong supporter, hard worker, and very involved with not only our association, but the community at large.
Right. Yes, I was honored to be the chieftain of the Bellingham Games 1 year, and for my work there in the athletics. And so it was an honor to be a part of that. So it is a cool, cool thing. And that kind of is a great kickoff to this conversation. What we wanted to do in this particular episode of Haggis Talk is talk a little bit about that, that village that it takes to put on a games. And of course we should be charged, with some whiskey to do so. Cause, it takes the smoothing efforts of the dulcet liquor to calm our nerves. Occasionally I've got a nice, Lafroy 10 sitting in front of me. Colin, what do you got?
I've got a Glenfiddich 18 year, or no, Glenlivet 18 nice. Year.
And Sharon, are you enjoying something this evening?
Actually, no. During our quarantine, I've been drinking too much, so.
You're enjoying your NC right now.
I'm trying to sustain.
It's a good idea. Mondays, you shouldn't promote this. It's a good call.
Monday and no alcohol.
Very good. Well, let's get into this. I'll ask you both first. Tell me a little bit. How did you get into Scottish cultural events and specifically the SSHGA? Ladies first. Ladies
you
first.
Want me to start?
Let's do Sharon.
Well, for me, my great-grandmother was from Scotland, and so it was kind of part of not only my grandfather, but my mother's culture growing up. And my grandparents took one of my brothers to see one of the pipe bands from Great Britain down at the old ice arena, and he fell in love with the bagpipes, but he was only 5 years old, so he did not have long enough fingers to play the chanter. So the older brother, John, got the lessons, who he was 7 at that time, and started playing the bagpipes. And we just got involved with the pipe bands through that. And then my mother volunteered for the Highland Games. And in the 1960s, she was the first woman to be elected to a trustee position on the board. And at that point, you were competing, but you were also volunteering because mom said so. So this whole culture has been part of our lives since we were all pretty young. And it's a pretty great place to be.
Yeah, I mean, wow. You're part of kind of the founding fathers and mothers of the games tradition in the Pacific Northwest, which is awesome.
Right. Still alive to talk about it.
Which is even better. That's awesome. And Colin, what about you? What's your background on coming to this goofy kind of cool thing that we do every year?
Well, like Sharon, I had some relatives come over. My dad and my dad Ian and my aunt Gail both came over on a slow boat. My dad, I think, was about 14 or 15. And, they made their way over to the U.S. or via Canada for a while and made their way down into this area, settled in Aberdeen, and eventually my dad wound up having me. And that was a pretty long period of time that took. And all of that time, my dad hadn't gotten into any of the Scottish scene up here, unfortunately. So I don't have the childhood history in the games like Sharon did. I wish I did. But long story short, my aunt Gail got involved in the Scottish scene down in Oregon and started inviting my dad down to those things. And my dad, my mom, and I would go down and start partaking in stuff down there. And then we found out about the Seattle Scottish Highland Games and the games going on in Enumclaw, and started attending those probably when I was about 19 or 20, at least something like that, and haven't looked back since. I don't think I've missed a game since that point. Been over 20 years now, I think.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I mean, we don't care how people find us and discover this particular, part of the world's culture and embrace it and enjoy it as it is, however long mm-hmm. or quick you've been involved. So that's awesome. And of course, you mentioned Enumclaw. We'll get into the actual games themselves a bit, but as it relates to the organization, the Seattle Scottish Highland Games Association, Colin, what's kind of the overall mission of the organization as it relates to the community and the event?
Well, really, what we're trying to do is bring people like me into the Scottish scene here. There's a lot of people in our area that have Scottish background or are just plain interested in a Scottish background or something like that. And all we're trying to do is make sure that we give a facility or an avenue for people to get involved in that from either just coming and witnessing things and enjoying the weekend, eating some of the food, listening to some of the music, to potentially getting involved in some of the organizations that are part or work with ours, some of the clans that are involved with us and our own organization. We just try to make sure that we further the Scottish spirit up here because it is strong and we want to make sure we keep it going.
Yeah, love that. I mean, I think like anything, the Scottish cultural influence on America, the melting pot that it is, came, just as hard into the Pacific Northwest region as any other region, combined with the Asian American influences and Irish American and, all the various cultural places around the world where people ended up emigrating and being a part of the American experience. And the Scottish culture is no different, right? The Celtic culture was kind of a part of that as well. So you get kind of a flavor of some of the backgrounds of people and where they came from that end up settling in America, which is kind of cool, I think. So now, Sharon, how does the SSHGA's mission as an organization kind of compare with the actual games event itself, which sometimes there's confusion on, are they different orgs? Because the actual event itself is titled the Pacific Northwest Scottish Highland Games and Clan Gathering. So kind of what's the nuance there?
Well, it's like the main thrust of our organization is to put on the games. And originally when the games were held in West Seattle Stadium way back in 1947, there was also a all-city track meet going on at the time, and all we had there was the dancing, the athletics, and the individual piping and drumming and pipe bands. So over the years, it's evolved from, these basic five games committees into now 46 committees that it takes to put on the games. And we've added the clans for people to get into their heritage. We have the vendors. We have added the Scottish Heritage Tent. So they have speakers that can fill in a lot of the historical information that we don't have. So it's become a lot more than that five-trick pony that started out in 1947 and expanded on what we try to inform people about. And true, some people come and they just want to see the athletics or they just want to see the pipe bands. But all these other things are there and get them curious, get them to learn a little bit more and get more involved in the culture itself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a great day out. That's for sure. I love the fact that in 1947, when it started, so it was in Seattle, and like traditional Scottish Highland Games was around the athletics, often is obviously referred to as the heavy events. But in Scotland, there's some of the athletics are track and running and various other things. So that's interesting that it had some of that original start, but it wasn't, Sharon, it wasn't always in Seattle, right? Did it move up to Everett for a period of time and was there for a while?
Yeah, we kind of were like orphan children for a while because we were at Highline Community College. We were there for a few years after we left West Seattle Stadium. Lake Washington High School. We went to Pop Kenny Field, which is part of the Bothell School District. And then we ended up at Everett Memorial Stadium. But they kind of came along in the 80s when Mariners baseball was the thing, and they brought in one of their farm teams, the Aqua Sox, and they were going to do a big remodel on the stadium. So they told us we had to leave for 1 year, but they wanted us to come back. And they tried to, the city council took us out to show us some different venues, but none of them were really anything that would fit the bill for our event and the scope and, you know, that kind of stuff. So my brothers and I had all been involved in 4-H out at the King County Fairgrounds. And so I went out and talked to them about moving the Highland Games out there. And they were amiable to it and gave us a pretty good deal. And being Scottish, when they said it was cheaper for rent on Sunday, it was like, well, if we're going to be doing all this, let's make it into a 2-day games and move it to Enumclaw. And then we found out that renting equipment, which we hadn't had to do at other places, it was only 50% of the cost on Sunday. And it was like, it's fake.
Classic Scott.
There was a lot of naysayers. There was a lot of naysayers back in like 1986 that Enumclaw was the end of the world and nobody was going to follow us out there. And I think the last year at Everett, we had 1,500 people. But that first year out in Enumclaw on Saturday and Sunday combined, we had 11,000. And boy, oh boy, was it a onslaught under fire.
Wow, yeah. Holy cow. And the gate and the gates have never and the gates just are every year just as big, right? Tens of thousands of people coming out every day.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, is it over 20,000 I think last
year?
Yeah.
It was a little under 20 because the economy's kind of given us a death blow a couple years ago, and of course this year.
Oh my goodness, right?
But let's see, I think it was our 50th anniversary out there. We had 26,000 people that year. So that's our biggest group out at Enumclaw.
Yeah.
Well, anywhere.
Well, and like, you know, like you said, Highland Games obviously have a unique venue requirement because you've got a mixture of your normal kind of fair-like things, but then you've got all the room you need for the mass bands, for the areas where you can have piping while they're dancing and the music isn't so loud that everybody can hear what's going on. And then, of course, the athletics are throwing things all over the place that you'd rather not have people get hurt. So you got to have a little space to keep them corralled. Plus they're large animals and they should really be left alone anyway. So other than in the beer garden, but that's another conversation.
You were still talking about the athletes and not the special farm, right?
That's right. Some of them are as big as a Highland coo, that's for sure. But yeah, so, okay, that's fantastic. Well, I mean, let's get into the nitty gritty. I mean, one of the things that I was excited about to talk with you guys about for this episode was a little bit of, you know, because of the way we're doing this year, you know, having a bit of a virtual event, trying to keep people thinking about coming out to the games in 2021. I thought it'd be fun for them to get a little bit of a behind the scenes look at what it takes to put these things on. If people are interested and if they're regular, you know, attendees of the games. So let's kind of get into the nitty gritty, right? You started to get into a little bit of that, Sharon. So, I mean, the logistics are significant here, right? It's obviously a 2-day event, but it takes basically all year planning. I mean, you know, y'all take a month or so off and around the holidays and then get right back into it. What are the number of volunteers involved for the weekend? What's the total?
We have about 300 volunteers. Some of those are people who only, drop in and do one shift, say on Saturday or Sunday for a 3-hour shift. But then we have other people who are there from Wednesday and don't leave till the last storeroom's locked up on Monday night. So kind of a full spectrum of how often those 300 people are there.
Yeah.
And then my mother and her crew feed all of them meals while we're doing setup. So we're usually doing the setup process for something for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Serving anywhere from 30 people up to 70 people for our spaghetti feed dinner on the Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, that's, a lot of people working all day long, long days, trying to keep them fed. And it's usually warm. It's in the summertime, so keeping them watered and food and all that. And of course, Colin, talk about cat herding. I mean, I think as Sharon, as you said, I mean, most of the games start with that kind of what I call the trifecta, right? That three-legged stool of piping, dance, and the athletics. And then everything starts to build from there as far as all the other things that make it, all the other cultural elements and all the events and then all the food and all the fun and all that. And now there's like, how many did you say committee-wise? 40?
46.
I mean, Colin, that's quite a coordination effort. How do you get that done? Other than lots of whiskey.
Well, admittedly, unfortunately, it's a little warm for whiskey. When I'm up there, I typically only want water. It's amazing, but I would prefer to be up there sweating a lot rather than being dumped on by rain. So the few years that we've had rain up there have been sort of party poopers, so to speak. But the biggest thing is trying to keep everybody happy. Last year, I think, was my first year sort of being one of the main point people. Sharon, I think, has been doing this for years, and so she's fully aware of what it's like trying to get everything set up ready for that first Friday evening portion of the games, because it's two full days, but there's also a half day on Friday. So we need to have everything sort of situated and ready to go in time for the festivities that start, I think, around 4:30 or 5 o'clock, I think, Friday evening, which is typically a free day for people coming in. So it's a lot of work basically over the course of about 2.5 days. I typically show up on Wednesday, just because there's some small things that have to happen, Wednesday, not a ton, a bunch of loading that happens Wednesday evening. And then Thursday is when it really starts in earnest. And that's when we hope that the majority of those volunteers that show up for the weekend are going to start coming in, so we can have help getting trucks unloaded or loaded up from the storage rooms and all of that stuff. So we've got some fantastic, much appreciated volunteers that are willing to take a little bit of time off of work, which is what all of us that do this all year long do that week in order to come out and get the game set up. So it's a little bit of trying to keep your own head on straight from my perspective. When you got people calling you saying, hey, this isn't working. We need something over here. How do we get it? What the heck's going on? This person is supposed to be there and they're not around, that sort of thing. So like I said, last year was my first year experiencing it, and I was able to get through it. Had Sharon sort of giving me advice when she was able to, and because she had her own stuff going on. And you just sort of make your way through it and get it done. There's the whole get her done type statement, and that's basically what we do.
Very good. And of course, like, how many, isn't there like a half dozen or more bands that are kind of coming through and playing and constantly, coordinating those type things? There's just so much going on.
Yeah, well, that's the reason for all of the different committee chairs that we've now got. So there's committee chairs for the bands, different committee chairs for the dancing. this has gotten so big, it would be way too difficult for a few people to make it run. And, the more the merrier, so to speak. So if people are interested in getting involved and helping to continue this into the future, we can use all the help we can get.
There's always room, that's for sure. And of course, you've had some real successful organizational partnerships over time. Obviously the press usually gets a hold of stuff, and King Five's doing various things. And then we've got, of course, just various relationships with the community. How's the Enumclaw city been to work with Sharon over time? I mean, don't they, there's local police support and other, EMTs and all those kinds of things are all part of the fairgrounds. But it just seems like there's a lot of coordination with the other city community stuff that we do to put it on as well. Yeah.
Right. I think a lot more of it has more red tape now. When we first moved out there, it was, a little more small town atmosphere, and you could just call up the different groups and they just showed up. Whereas now it's more kind of contractual things, but I think that's just life getting to be more complicated as, as it goes on. But we get really amazing support, number one, from this organization that's taken over the Expo Center.
Renee Popke.
I mean, they bend over backwards to help us out on site and the meetings that we have to get everything in order. I mean, she's an amazing organized woman for that. As far as the Chamber of Commerce, they are very supportive of our event. A lot of the merchants down in town have been known to go and put displays in all of their windows advertising the games. You take posters and brochures out there when we do our fairgrounds meeting and take them around to the different stores, and all of them are more than willing to put the stuff up for you and engage with you. And it's pretty amazing the number of people who in that town come out to the games, because most people used to ignore it when it was the fair, like the plague. But now they're very supportive of the Highland Games. Of course, we do have a little bit of a unique product.
Right. Very true. Very true. Well, what's what would you say the most challenging thing is in putting on a festival of this magnitude? And again, background for our listeners, right? The games that happens in Enumclaw, the Pacific Northwest event, is, I'd say, and there's no specific official version of how they count this, but it is in the top 10 largest games in the nation annually. There are massive games like the Pleasanton games down in Sacramento, Pleasanton, California area. There's the games out east like Stone Mountain and some of a few big ones like that. But this is one of the top 10 biggest games and most sought after games for both dancers and pipers and athletics and all that in the country. So it's kind of a big deal. So what would be your kind of, give me a quick, what your most challenging thing is, if you had to pick one.
Boy, that's really a good question. I mean, obviously we're always worried about making enough money, because as a nonprofit, we have no corporate sponsors. The gate is basically what pays for the games and pays for our whole rest of the year, anything else that we do as far as operating costs and stuff. So, So the weather is probably a real worry. If it's too hot, they don't come. And if it's raining, they don't come.
Amazingly enough, Scottish drink a lot. And amazingly enough, when it gets really, really hot, they don't drink enough. They're more interested in, fortunately, they're more interested in drinking water, but You know, yeah, the heat definitely affects the way things go on a weekend.
That's interesting. And people wouldn't think about the fact that weather is probably the one of the biggest challenges to the regular, you know, annual situation. That's good. Well, what would be the most rewarding thing then? I mean, Sharon, let's start with you. I mean, my goodness, you've been doing this for going on 3 decades now. What's that key thing that animates and gives you the passion to keep enjoying it?
Oh, probably the mass bands on Sunday afternoon. Number one, you realize that it's probably the closing down of it. So there's a little nostalgia that year's over, but you also realize that as soon as the crowds start leaving, we're all getting into our street clothes, our work clothes, to go out and start tearing things down. And we have the next Monday to look forward to. Yeah. But so many people, especially when I was president and up there for the closing ceremonies, old people, young people would come up and share with you just how much this event meant to you. And, the first year we did the dove release at our closing ceremonies, an older gentleman from Scotland came up and he had tears streaming down his face and was just so enthusiastic and appreciative of what we had done and what we had given him by doing the Highland Games. See, I'm already starting to cry.
I know. It's so moving. It's so moving. And you're right, Sharon. Again, for those of you who may be listening and have never been to the games yet, we please come join us. And I'm telling you what, there's seminal moments in life that you can experience that will just kind of give you goosebumps, right? And there are many of them. And I can assure you, one of them is the first time you've sat there right next to the field when those mass bands fire up. And that just cacophony of wonderful sound comes you can feel it in your bones. It's a fantastic feeling. So I'm with you. I love that part. How about you, Colin? What's for you the most rewarding thing?
Well, sort of similar to Sharon, the massed bands has always been one of my favorite portions of the weekend. I always try to get a spot right in front. I just sit down on the grass by the flagpoles, and or at least before I became the president of the association, I would sit on the grounds in front of the flagpoles and just try to be there so that when the bands are marching out, right when that last piper turns the corner and you can suddenly hear the snare drums, that for me is just really, really cool to hear. It's like a switch being turned on. The pipers are cool, but man, those drummers, once you can hear them really, really clearly, is awesome. One of the parts that has really touched me, like Sharon said, on the release of the doves, for me, my dad being born in Scotland, you know, he got involved in this a little bit in terms of coming out to the games over the years. And when he wound up passing away, we had him cremated in his kilt and everything, but he's sort of, the sire for us Mathesons over here on this side, along with my Aunt Gail on her side of the family. But being able to listen to the flowers of the forest and watching the doves fly away through the plain of Amazing Grace is just really, really something to see out there on the field.
That's very powerful. That's awesome. Well, thank you both for sharing that. And then, of course, it wouldn't be the games without asking, what's your favorite beer garden story? Those that you've not been sworn to secrecy, that is, right? I don't want to betray any trusts. Because sometimes, you know, what happens in the beer garden stays in the beer garden. But give me a good story in your tenure of something crazy that you've seen.
Oh, crazy.
I've seen plenty of crazy.
Yeah, right. Boy.
It's the place for it.
There's a group of guys that would come up to the games for years, and I haven't actually seen them recently, but they used to work down at the Swiss Pub down in Tacoma, and Saturday was always their day for working down there, and they'd be working basically until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. They'd all sleep, wake up and then come out to the games and hang out in the outdoor beer garden basically all day long on their day off, spending money, drinking beer, and having a good time. And they would always wind up building the biggest plastic beer cup pyramid on one of their tables that you'd ever lay eyes on. And, that group of guys was just a really, really super cool group of people. And that's the kind of thing that I really like seeing in the beer garden, at the very least, is people out there having fun, no problems.
Yeah. Well, my youngest brother, Matt, and I co-chair the outdoor pub. And a few years ago now, Matt, who's 6'7", came over to me and said, "I have one of the athletes over here. Got a Highland Games check that he says was his winnings from today, and he has no cash, and he wants to cash it with me. Can I do that?" And I said, "Well, yeah, sure, have him sign it, look at his ID, and yeah, give him the money for it. That's fine." And Matt goes, "Oh, thank God. I think he's bigger than me. I didn't want to have to go back and tell him."
That's fantastic.
He was probably really looking forward to that.
Right. He's obviously a smart guy, because you really don't want to get in between yourself and an athlete heading for the beer garden. That's for sure.
Luckily, he checked his fork at the gate. Yeah,
of course, what I always mention to everybody that people don't realize, because they assume the big guys that throw stuff are the ones at the beer garden first, but it's not actually true. The pipers tend to get done with their competitions earlier, and except for the mass band situation, those guys can be in the beer garden for half the day. And then we're throwing all day. So by the time we get to the beer garden, we get a couple hours, they've already been there. They're half in the bag.
Yep. And then by the time mass bands are rolling around, they're trotting out to the main field trying to gather up all their equipment to hit mass bands.
Yes, it can be fun to see. That's for sure. I love it.
And they still managed to pull off a sweet mass band.
I love it. Hey, so as we start to close, what are you hoping that the public and the community are going to get from this kind of virtual event and the content on the website? I mean, we of course would love to be meeting in July in person, but instead we're going to try and do this to keep the spirit alive for everybody getting excited for 2021. So what are your kind of personal hopes for the way this comes across?
So
well,
I hope that, number one, all the work that's been being done through our Facebook page gets all new set of people involved and thinking about coming to the games and joining us by the excitement of what's being presented this weekend. And I'm hoping that it fills the hole in all of our hearts that we're not meeting this year, and that we enjoy it and remember how much we're missing it this year, and with next year being our 75th anniversary, sky's the limit. It'll be an epic game.
Well said.
Yeah, we're hoping that people take this as an opportunity to remember what they really, really like about the games, and understand that those of us that put it on really, really like it too. And when we started seeing all of the comments from people on Facebook saying that they were so disappointed that the games were having to be canceled, and this is one of the things they really look forward to every year, we just realized, man, we've got to try to pull off something. And we've got some fantastic people that have helped us pull off our virtual Highland Games this year. Megan Topper and Sharon, and you, Brett, and other people have been really, really helping to get this thing going. So we just want to make sure that everybody keeps a taste in their mouth for what they're going to experience next year in 2021.
Excellent. Absolutely. Well, we got your favorite song here, Colin, "Will Ye No Come Back Again," playing in the background to usher us off. And I was just so happy you guys joined me. Thanks for joining this episode of Haggis Talk. You guys were awesome. I hope you'll come back as we keep everybody informed about what's going on with the association. Thanks for joining. And thanks for listening to the show, everybody. That's it for this this episode. Thanks to and shout outs to our group, the Piglies, for their beautiful food. The Haggis Talk podcast comes out whenever we dang well please. Questions and comments, you can email us at Scott's number four ever at the SSHGA at Facebook. Sorry, the Scott's Forever at SSHGA.org on Facebook. I lost my music. We'll bring it back. And Facebook, SSHGA, the Seattle Highland Games Association. Until next time, may your flask always be full, your kilt stay dry, your prose be as silky smooth as Robbie Burns, and your haggis be warm, reeking and rich. Sláinte mór, everybody. Good health.
Thanks for listening to Haggis Talk with your whiskey and haggis wielding lovable Celtic hosts.
Check out www.sshga.org for more episodes and information about Scottish Highland Games.
Boy, are haggis hard to catch.
Until next time,
Sláinte mór.
Good health.